RadioInfluence.com.
Welcome to the May 15th, 2019 edition of the MMA Report Podcast with Dale Galvan. I am Jason Foy. Come here on this week's edition of the show. We're going to take a look back at what happened last weekend, UFC 237 and Bellator 221. Plus, we're going to preview Saturday's UFC event, which, of course, is taking place up in Rochester, New York, headlined by a welterweight matchup between two guys who were, right there at top division at 155, the former 155-pound champion, Rafael Dos Anjos and Kevin Lee. Of course, we'll get into some of the fights that interest us and whatnot. Of course, if you're not subscribed to the show, you can do that on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Podcasts. Daniel, how you doing, man?
Jason, I am doing quite well. I'm recovering because I tell you what, man, being a mixed martial arts fan, that was a fun week. But by God, that was a long one. We had three events, I think, that were really worth talking about in PFL, Bellator, and UFC. So, Jason, to be completely honest with you, I'm just recovering from the week that was mixed martial arts.
Yeah, man, it was a great night of fights on Saturday night. Went over to a buddy's house and had the two TVs set up, so we were watching Bellator and the UFC. And I thought this was, kind of in talking about both these cards, we had a great question on Twitter from at JG10230. He says, UFC and Bellator going head-to-head on the same night. Is there really, truly a winner? Also, what's Kevin Lee's future in limbo between 155 and 170? We'll get into Kevin Lee aspect of that later on the show, JG. In terms of going head-to-head, I would honestly say I think the winner is the fans, because at the end of the day, if you sat there and you were like myself and you had both events up on your television set, we were really the winners of it, that we got an opportunity, to see two pretty good events.
Yeah, man, I agree with you. And it's just hard for us to say. And I'll tell you why it's hard for us to say. It's hard for us to even look at the business of these two organizations when numbers aren't accurate and you don't know them. Like, whenever you put shows on TV, we're going to get the viewership numbers. But we don't honestly know how many people are watching these pay-per-views or these shows on the streaming applications. So that makes our job very hard to analyze the business. My gut instinct is these awesome events are happening in forests where no one's noticing them. It's a tree falling down and no one knows how to sign up to get inside the forest with their credit card. So that's the issue, Jason. But if you were an MMA fan and you did watch it, it was an enjoyable weekend. I mean, I'm sure we're going to dive into all the cards. But just to be, we didn't talk about how we're going to tackle this, but I'm gonna pitch it to you. This whole weekend, Jason, what was your favorite moment of this whole weekend when it came to MMA? Either card, you can even be crazy and tell me a PFL moment. What was the defining moment of the weekend for you?
It's so funny that you mentioned that, because as I was thinking of the show today, I was like, we should probably talk our top five moments of the weekend. To me, number one is the Douglas Lima knockout of Michael Page. And, we had a question about that, and we'll get into that momentarily. But to me, that was the most memorable. My number two, and it's not too much farther behind it, has to be the main event of the UFC show where, Rose, was piecing apart Jessica Andrade in that first round. I mean, the first 6-7 minutes of that fight, I was like, man, Rose looks unbelievable here. And then, of course, the slam that ends the night for her. To me, those were by far the two most memorable moments, for me.
Oh, those are two great ones. And I to me, the top three moments are pretty, you could put it in any order, right? You got the Lima knockout, the Rose slam into the canvas, the Patricio Pitbull, Michael Chandler finish too, with Pitbull getting the finish, and then also you could, there's some debate of an early stoppage. Those are definitely the three big storylines. Man, I guess just to start off with your number one moment, which I can't disagree with you there, with Douglas Lima beating Michael Page. I think just what a way to destroy Michael Page here. I mean, Michael Page was competitive in round one, but whenever a fight ends like that, it just becomes just a highlight reel finish. The way Lima just completely put him out, and kept him out. It was just a huge, huge win for Douglas Lima and for Michael Page. This might even be a situation where it could be something off of his chest, a lot of pressure gone after losing the undefeated streak. And maybe he's going to fight differently the next time we see him. But yeah, that co-main event, I mean, you can't ask for a more memorable finish. And it's hard to go out there and stand and trade a Michael Page. But to do that and also finish him like he did is just an absolute – I mean, Douglas Lima is a man on a mission. The mission is winning this welterweight tournament.
I actually thought Michael Page did a pretty good job in the fight, you know, especially in that opening round where Douglas gets it to the ground. I thought we saw vast improvements since February with Michael Page limiting the offense that Douglas Lima had on the ground. And at Dirty Bird 212 said this. He goes, "I think the loss of Lima only raised MVP stock. If you disagree, state your case." I don't disagree with that. I would definitely agree with that statement. That I think it does, raise the stock of Michael Page a little bit. I mean, look, Michael Page is a guy that it was a slow build for him. But you know, one of the things that when you have these type of tournaments, there is no more slow build. You know, you're going to get in there with an elite level fighter. And so I thought Michael did very well, but I mean, man, I feel bad for Michael Page because, man, that knockout is going to be on the Bellator highlight reels forever. And for anyone who's ever been to a Bellator event and you've probably seen it on TV, that low level camera they have, that's at basically on the floor of the cage. And so it's a circular type camera that is just right in one of the holes of the fence. And Bellator had that thing positioned just at the right spot that catches that knockout. I mean, and man, just an unbelievable knockout for Douglas Lima. And I think just as a fight fan, I think we're all sitting there going, okay, you know, man, it'd be awesome if the final is Rory Lima too, because we all remember how good the first fight was between those two guys.
Yeah, man, I feel watching these fights that as long as Rory maintains some level of being like the old Rory, he's gonna walk his way to the finals. Lima McDonald, I think that's a great fight. I think that sets up for Lima to win because it just seems like he's so locked in. I mean, God, the way Michael Page got down to the canvas, it's like his body was like going up and half of it was just being drugged down by gravity. The dude was like contorting as he made his way down to the canvas. And an interesting way to look at it where it's like, yes, it was a brutal loss for Michael Page. And yes, this is a video he's probably going to see every time he's backstage at a Bellator event getting ready to fight. He's going to look at the screen that they're showing in the arena. They're going to show him getting knocked out. That's just going to be something. It's going to be there every week. But a nice way of looking at it is, if you watch round one, he held his own and had at times better moments against one of the top welterweights in Bellator. So I can't disagree there. But it was Douglas Lima's night. And if you had asked me, Jason, what moment I just won't forget from this weekend, it's absolutely Rose Namajunas going head first into the ground. I mean, first off, round one was just a beautiful round for Rose Namajunas. She went up against Jessica Andrade, one of the toughest, absolutely the toughest challenger she's had in the division. And she looked great with her jab and her movement and everything, and looked like she was on her way to a victory, Jason, only to have things come to an unceremoniously end. And it looks like it not only ends the fight, but it also might just end her career here as she maybe retires after this fight.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about this with the slam, and let me get your thought on that. You know, obviously, I mean, look, it was a legal slam, and, you know, John McCarthy has talked about it. Mark Goddard has talked about it as well. It was a legal slam, but is our perception of that slam different because it's a female, not a male?
God, it's a tough question. Because, especially for me to answer, Jason, and I'll tell you why. Look, I'm a big pro wrestling fan. I love professional wrestling. I've even attempted to train. Maybe one day I'll do it again. Who knows? So, in pro wrestling, you're trained to fall down. It hurts every time you fall down. And one of the number one priorities of being a pro wrestler is to tuck your chin, because the one way you can hurt yourself very, 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 very badly is if you land with your neck. You watch some Japanese wrestling, those guys are crazy. Sometimes they do it. But you know, if you put all of your body weight on your neck and your neck lands head first, that's how you break your neck. That's how you get concussions. I mean, that's serious damage. So I'm the wrong person to ask, Jason, because like I am so hypersensitive to when people land on their neck first. And when I saw that, I cringed. I mean, I watch hours of wrestling all the time, and that's more brutal than anything I've ever seen. So I think first off, when we see people complain about blood or whatever with female fights, it's always a question if we're allowing that to, you know, cause us to be more concerned that we have any right to be. Mm-hmm. But so, yeah, from my perspective, Jason, it's just anytime I see a situation like that, I freak out because I just think, oh, my God, the neck is broken.
Yeah.
And that was my general thought. I know the slam is legal. I mean, do you think we should it's hard to make something like that illegal, right? Because it's like she was defending herself. She's going for a slam, and that's a random occurrence. But, God, that looks so dangerous. And, I mean,
oh, no, yeah.
For you, do you think that played a role, the fact that this was a woman's fight here that we're freaking out so much about it? Or
I think for some people it's definitely the case. I think it's hard to not sit there and say – you know, when I think of memorable slams in MMA, you think Rampage Arona, you know, if that slam was a female, would we look at it differently? I think it's just natural for us to do that. You know, I did kind of get this, you know, WTF moment of Rose saying that Dana White picked her walkout song for her. I was just like, what? Why are you letting the promoter pick your walkout song? And you know, I think the fascinating thing you get with Rose when you hear her talk is you don't feel like there's any BS coming your way, that you are just getting the honest answer, you know. And I heard Ben Folk say this on his podcast, and I thought it was spot on. It's, you know, we have these fighters that were like, and we'll get into BJ later, where we're like, man, it's time to walk away. But then when you have a younger fighter, what Rose, I think, is 26 years old, where, you know, she's kind of noting, hey, this may be the last time you see me, or we're kind of naturally like, no, keep competing. But, you know, I mean, outside of maybe the first round that Rose had against Joanna to win the title, to me, that first round was Rose's best round she's ever had in the octagon. But I will say this, Jessica Andrade winning, I think that there's a lot of 115-pound fighters that were probably very ecstatic about that because, you know, if you're Joanna Jędrzejczyk, this just gave you new life at the 115-pound pound title, because I don't know if you would get a third fight in the next 9 months with Rose Namajunas. So to me, this sets up for her. And when I look at 115 pounds, to me, Tatiana Suarez is the uncrowned champion. I think it's only a matter of time before she's champion. She's got Nina Ancer off. I think if she goes out there and has a great performance in Chicago here in a couple of weeks, you know, she'll get the next title shot.
Yeah, I think Suarez versus Andrade is a hell of a fight. And look, man, Jessica Andrade, the cool thing about her as champion is she's an exciting champion. And so was Rose, to be fair to Rose Namajunas. But Jessica Andrade brings the fight to you. I mean, that's kind of what you saw in the fight itself, is Rose really good with the tactical striking outside. And Andrade is the one who put the pressure, engage inside, take two shots to land a pair of big shots of your own. So the cool thing about Jessica Andrade as champion is you got to know those fights are going to be exciting unless it becomes a wrestling game, which whenever Andrade makes it a wrestling game, she at least makes it pretty damn entertaining with ground and pound. Man, Dana White picking Thunderstruck by AC/DC is like the most dad move ever. It's like, dad, pick my entrance song. How about that AC/DC? Yeah. It's like, geez, pick, God, get out of here with that nonsense. The depressing thing about Rose Namajunas, Jason, is like, I'm super selfish. I'm an MMA fan. I look at Rose and I see a 26-year-old who's one of the best talents I've ever seen in my life. She's just, if she keeps going with the sport, you got to think she's going to go down as maybe one of the best female fighters of all time. I mean, with the win over Yanni on Jacek, that's one hell of a way to go about starting that legacy. So if she kept herself focused, there's without a question in our mind that she can go out and be great. You look at her improvement from fight to fight, it's unreal. But it's funny how when we talk about honest fighters, the thing they're always like it's never about like, oh, we know they're honest because they told us they love eating Fruit Loops. It's always about the honesty always pertains to wanting to leave the sport because they don't love it and it's brutal. Like, that's always the trajectory of the quote-unquote honest fighter. Well, it says something. It's like, man, do we have this weird culture where people don't feel comfortable leaving this sport? And, like, here's the thing, man. If you have the financial ability to leave a job and you hate your job or you dislike it, you should definitely do it. And it is never more true than a sport like mixed martial arts. You know, if I go to my job and I work at Pizza Hut, it's not the worst thing in the world if I don't like it. Though, I mean, what's the worst thing that can happen? I get burnt by an oven?
That would hurt, though.
Yeah, that would hurt, to be honest with you. I worked in fast food for 2 days, and that hurt like an MF-er. Now, MMA, you're getting punched in the face every day you clock into work. Yeah. So that's one job where if your heart isn't into it, get the hell out of there. Because at the end of the day, every time your face is getting punched, you're doing damage to your brain. Your brain's a limited resource. Protect it. So, look, I'm selfish. I'm kind of sad that Rose is probably stepping away, and I'm pretty confident she will step away. That kind of seems like where her head is at. But I applaud her for being honest.
You know the thing about Rose when you listen to her talk, and I don't know if you can necessarily always say this about fighters, there's an end game. There is this, I know what I'm trying to accomplish. And then the other thing, when I was driving around from meeting the meeting yesterday, I was thinking about this. Like, I wonder if MMA fighter pay was some of the pay that we see in boxing for main event fighters, would that change anything?
I think
if Rose was making $10 million a fight, does it change her thoughts? I don't know. Maybe it doesn't.
I think it does, because money matters. And even you're making $10 million paydays, it's hard to retire from a sport like that because – Money is so freaking important because, like, no, I don't need to make a case for money. Everyone knows why. But for someone like Rose, who I feel like she's got the type of soul to, like, do good in the universe. Like, I think she's going to do something with her life after fighting that's going to be real positive for society. So, I mean, you look at all that money, I mean, she could throw it into something like that. So, yeah, I mean, I look at the business model for the UFC. I mean, they signed a big-time deal with ESPN, and there's got to be a lot of money lying around that should boost – that should theoretically boost the payroll, but it's probably not going to happen. And unfortunately for UFC, you know, the one way some of these fighters make big time paydays is big time pay per view buy rates. You know, they write in their contract, they get a percentage of the buys. And this ESPN model completely takes money out of the pocket of those fighters because the buy rates of these shows are going to be so much lower than if they were on traditional pay-per-view for at least the next few years.
Yeah, I mean, sorry to cut you off there, but I think you kind of bring up a very good point, is when you look at where mixed martial arts viewership is at this point, you look at the UFC, majority of their content's on ESPN+. Yeah, you'll have, you know, a pay-per-view prelim on ESPN, ESPN2, but, you know, majority of their content's on ESPN+. Bellator, I think it's 7 exclusive DAZN events a year. And, you know, let's be honest about it, all the major Bellator events are going to be on DAZN. It's kind of one of these things of how does when you're a sport behind a streaming paywall, how do you ultimately grow? And I think it's kind of a question for Bellator, which, look, to me, you know, financially, the DAZN deal is a home run for Bellator. And, you know, look, and I'm a big fan of the DAZN product. I love, you know, the fact that I am a cord cutter. I can check every Bellator event, you know, on DAZN, or, you know, that MLB whip around show they have every night. It's a great, you know, it's basically the MLB's version of the Red Zone channel. Essentially, that's what it is. So I love the DAZN, but there is part of me is like, how do these organizations continue to grow to that fan base that doesn't have these streaming services?
And here's – yeah, I totally think that's one of the biggest problems in the sport. And it's why it's constantly a thing we get back to, because It was very, if you're someone who's watched MMA since like the mid 2000s, we saw firsthand how these things work, how businesses grow, how the sport grew. We saw this sport not super well watched, but it was on Spike TV and people consumed the product and they were driven to watch it on pay-per-view. That exposure, the platform, allowed the sport to get to a point where they do so many buys with a GSP fight or a Conor fight. So we know the process. And for the UFC, they're kind of okay because they have that ESPN exposure, and that's a big deal. Ordering the pay-per-views is still an obstacle. It sucks, I think, to purchase a subscription and then buy a pay-per-view for sure. For Bellator, I'm more concerned for them. You're right, the DAZN deal is a home run. But, God, here's the one thing, though. I have to keep in the back of my mind, you know, the amount of money these streaming companies are spending. The ones that aren't, like, proven commodities like Netflix or things that are building off major empires like ESPN Plus, I'm concerned about the long-term viability of DAZN, because I look at all the money spent on all these live sports and I'm like, what's the number of subscriptions you got to get to break even in 3 years? And I think that there's 0% chance they get there.
Yeah, I had someone ask me, I don't know if it was before the Bellator event or after the Bellator event, and they're like, hey, you know, have you ever heard about how they do in terms of DAZN? I'm like, no, I haven't heard either way. I mean, look, I just, as a consumer, I love it, but I think there's a lot of valid points you bring up there. I mean, speaking of that Bellator event, so we talked about our first two, you know, two memorable things. You know, the third one, Patricio Pitbull and Michael Chandler. As the fight is starting, my initial thought was, why is this the referee? Because, I mean, look, I understand you go to these markets that are not California, Nevada, New York, you know, those type of, you know, states. You go to a state like in Illinois, they want their local guy to work it. And I remember sitting there going, oh, God, I hope that this referee is not involved in anything controversial with this fight. And, well, he was. Watching it live, no issues with the stoppage. Watching in slow-mo, I'm like, okay. I don't think it's an awful stoppage. But the more and more that I watch the end of the fight, the more and more I go, man, Michael Chandler got effed.
Yeah. Well, first off, the ref was Rob Madrigal, right?
Yeah, I believe, yeah. Once again, Mike Beltran and Kevin McDonald were working the fight card. Like, to me, that, because, okay, so when the UFC is in Chicago on June 8th, you want to make a bet that Rob is not working a title fight?
Yeah, no, you're right.
To me, I'm sitting there, and if I'm Michael Chandler, I'm Dave Martin, his manager, and you're sitting there going, why the hell was this guy the referee in our fight? You know, because I mean, look, you can't, and look, if the shoes was on the other foot, Team Pitbull would be screaming up and down about this stoppage if the shoe was on the other foot. So, you know, and we can get into at what point does Patricio get the respect he deserves in the mixed martial arts community. But, like, to me, when you talk about a title fight, and someone mentioned this to me and said that, did you notice the referee didn't exactly give Michael Chandler a warning?
Yeah.
No, I just sit there and I just go, it makes me wonder, was the referee book from that fight kind of pushed onto Bellator by the commission? And, you know, that to me, I mean, look, you know, Pitbull hit him with a good shot. I mean, he did. But it's just the more and more I've watched, and I've probably watched that ending sequence 100 times probably by now. I'm more in this, like, man, Mike Chandler got effed.
I think this is a situation where the more you watch it, the more you think that, which probably means it was a bad stoppage. if the more you examine it, the more you're like, that was a poor stoppage, then yes. I think the first time you watch it, and this is how I felt, I thought it was okay, kind of. And my only reasoning for that is, you know, when Chandler got put away, he was on his stomach with his hands on the ground and his head in the mat for 2 seconds getting shots raining down on him. He wasn't intelligently defending himself, and he probably wasn't because he was freaking out. As soon as the ref starts touching both people is when he mounts his comeback. So that to me is where I have some sympathy for the official, but I will say, I believe, like many others, including John McCarthy, that in a championship fight, there should be a little more wiggle room and a little more time to allow Chandler to fire back.
Yeah, no question. You know, I think the, you know, I really hope that maybe this, you know, Patricio Pitbull, I think overall, I mean, look, he's got a body frame of a 35er, but you look at what he's done at 45 and now going up and claiming the 155 pound title, hopefully he does get a little more respect, you know, across the board. In terms of MMA, but of course, you know, we live in a sport where if you don't fight in the UFC, you typically don't get the respect you deserve. I mean, hell, let's look at Mauro Moraes. You know, the guy was just, you know, wrecking fools in the WSOF, and then, you know, and now we've seen in the UFC how talented he is, and who knows, here in a couple weeks, maybe he becomes a 135 pound champion. So I hope that there is some more respect on Patricio's name, but I think the one thing is you got to run this fight back.
Yeah, that's the one positive for Bellator is they have a fight they can run back that people are going to want to watch. I mean, big time win for Patricio Pitbull. I look at this victory and I think he can absolutely be one of the top guys in the UFC. He deserves respect because, I mean, he's been one of the better lightweight fighters for a very long time, but this win over Chandler was great. I mean, his stand-up is powerful and it maintained the power moving up in weight class. Moving forward, we were kind of looking at who could possibly challenge for the lightweight title, and I guess before we see Patricio vacate it, the fight to make is Chandler Pitbull to do it one more time and get a more conclusive winner. That's fair to Chandler, and it's fair to the fans, and it's a fight that people will want to watch.
I'm going to throw this one out to you. So I got this on Saturday, and I want to say this was before the fights actually started. It was from Brandon Guzman at Guz Congo. Always tweets me. I really appreciate the tweets. And he said, Chandler, Pitbull, which he meant Patricio, and Lima, the three goats of Bellator. There's a name I would put in that top three. I don't know who I take out. I guess it would be Lima. You know who my third guy would be?
Eddie Alvarez?
No.
Oh, who would your third guy be?
Ben Askren.
Oh.
Because remember, Askren dominated Lima, dominated Koreshkov. Like, no one gave him a fight in Bellator. Because it's been so long, and he's not had the longevity in Bellator that the other three guys have had. I understand that's why Brandon put those top three, but you got to talk Ben Askren. And I mean, Eddie Alvarez has got to be in there as well.
You got to talk Cole Conrad. You got to talk Cole Conrad, man. Undefeated heavyweight champion. He went off to the dairy farm. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, hey, throw back to Cole Conrad, dude. Who knows what that dude would be up to?
Yeah, exactly.
But Ben Askren is a hell of a call. I'm an Eddie Alvarez guy, but you talk about goats. I mean, Ben Askren didn't leave any. He turned in his test and he got a perfect 100 in his Bellator career. So.
Dude, go back and watch the fight against Andrei Koreshkov where he toyed with him.
Yeah, he did.
I mean, I thought that tweet was kind of interesting. In terms of, like, I guess we're now a kind of a number four type moment, I think I would probably look at the UFC card. And it would be more of, and this, it really talks multiple fights. And that would be potentially UFC 237 being the final fights we see for several fighters on this card. Maybe, Anderson Silva, based on, the injury situation there. You look at Thiago Alves, You look at Little Nog, you look at BJ Penn. I think these are all fires that you wouldn't be surprised if UFC 237 is our final fight, but also wouldn't be surprised if they continue fighting.
Dude, UFC 237 could be the last fight of both the career of BJ Penn and Jose Aldo.
Whoa.
What's that?
I'll bet you BJ fights again. I don't want to see him fight. I don't want to see him fight. But
he's lost 9 fights in a row or 8. I don't know how many fights he's lost.
Look, this is where a promoter has to step in and basically has to say, BJ, you know, we're not going to have you fight anymore. I mean, it was that fight looked nothing more than a sparring match. Clay Guida looked like he just didn't want to put BJ away. You know, BJ looked decent in the first round, but like, you know, leading up this fight where, you know, I saw the Aaron Bronster tweet where BJ was, you know, because I told him about how he thought he could still win a championship. I'm like, oh my God, someone be realistic with BJ. And then I saw this tweet from Julie Kedzie where she says, quote, guys, call it when you're done or be smart enough as a fighter to have people around you who care enough to tell you when you're done. And Marcos from Fight Hub TV responds and says, it's the team's fault. He's going to keep fighting. The team and the family need to stop him. And I look at BJ and I just go, does he just have yes men around him? I mean, I understand that probably needs money. He's got legal aspects going on in his life right now. But like, you sit there and like the people that are with BJ on a daily basis in his training, I just sit there and I just go, man, like, is there no one being honest here?
Dude. Oh, by the way, that reminded me. Yeah. BJ Penn has domestic abuse allegations. I just wanted to mention that because nothing pisses me off more than that. And the second, another thing that pisses me off is whenever you tell people not to ask you questions about it. So just a reminder, BJ Penn has domestic abuse allegations. Just a reminder, Google it, inform yourself. Look at what's going on.
And the fact that you're not willing to talk about it,
that just speaks volumes.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah. BJ Penn has domestic abuse.
Like, I always say that if you are innocent of what you're being accused of, and especially when you're talking about that type of, you know, situation, you would think you would be screaming to the rooftop that I am innocent. These are false allegations, you know, quote unquote, pulled Donald Trump line out, fake news. You know, and I just, you know, I saw that last week. And I just, at the end of the day, I just kind of sit there from the UFC's aspect. I didn't understand with everything that's going on with BJ, why book him in a fight?
I know. Like, I don't mean to get political, but the president of the United States needs to step in and get him. Like, just the president needs to stop BJ. Executive order.
Well, that's where Dana White has to step in. I mean, look, and, you know, Dana is a guy that people typically either love or hate. But this is where Dana has to step in. And this is where promoters have to be like, no, BJ, I'm not going to promote a fight with you anymore. You know, it was... You know, and George, who tweets me a lot, you know, and he tweeted me on Sunday. He's like, you know, I've just kind of been hoping that the old BJ is going to return, but it's not going to happen. You know, and I think that it's, you know, I remember a football player telling me this, and obviously we're talking two totally different sports. And I was at his house and there was, you know, something on TV about athletes retiring. And I just said to him, I said, when will you know it's time to call it a career? And he just looks at me and goes, Jay, my body's going to tell me. He goes, I'm not going to hang on. My body's going to tell me when it's over. But in MMA, it just, unfortunately, I think we see more of these cases than maybe someone like a Rose Namajunas who at a young age is going to walk away. I mean, the Barry Sanders of the world, that's not the norm. You know, that just does, you know, that's the rarity of walking away in your prime. And I just, you feel bad watching a fighter like BJ go out there because I can remember seeing the greatness of BJ Penn inside the UFC octagon. It's been a long damn time since we've seen that.
Yeah. Look, don't get me wrong. BJ Penn did win that first round, But man, that fight was not exciting, and he definitely lost rounds 2 and 3. I mean, he's up there in age, and God, his cardio is so bad. So it's got to be it for BJ Penn, and that's a nice story because it's a nice transition point, because if somebody's body was talking to them about retiring, it would be Anderson Silva. I mean, his knee was downright screaming at him when Jared Cannonier, who got booed out of the building in the post-fight interview, which that's Jared. You go to the North Pole and you decapitate Santa Claus, the polar bears are going to boo you. And that's what happens if you put away the career of Anderson Silva in Rio de Janeiro. Yeah, Anderson, man, his body sent him a message there.
When he went down initially, my thought was he blew all three ligaments in his knee.
Yeah, I'm literally stretching my knee as we talk, just cringing at that.
Yeah, you know, Guillermo Cruz had a report that there's no serious damage, only requires physical therapy, and that an MRI revealed no torn ligaments or broken bones. I am no doctor, but when I saw him go down, my first thought was that may be an ACL, MCL, NPCL injury. And poor Jared Cannonier, man, getting booed what seemed to be like 10 minutes long. You know, he just went out there and, you know, he did his thing. It's a big win for him, but you know, but you're right. Anderson, your body is telling you, man, it's just with a guy like Anderson, I don't understand what's the motive in continuing fighting. Is it just about getting paid?
Well, we see it a lot, Jason, and I think it has to be. This is what he knows in his life. You imagine being an MMA fighter and retiring, transitioning to something like accounting? You know, I just think when you're one of the all-time greats, the glory it must feel like to be on top of the mountain, you lose that. You got to want that with every fiber in your being, man.
I guess it's a matter of like, if I was, you know, in the management of the UFC, like this is where, you know, I'm calling up Ed Soares and saying, hey, let's have a sit down with Anderson. And, you know, maybe there's some role with Anderson inside the UFC as, you know, to kind of help the sport grow in Brazil or maybe, you know, here in the United States, whatnot. But I just, you know, it's just one of these things. I'm just like, why are we continuing to go down this path? Let's, you know, it's just, and there wasn't in that fight, I never had a moment where I thought Anderson was going to win.
No, not at all. I mean, it was a short fight, just one, you know, it ended late in the first round, but no, I mean, Jared looked like a fighter in his prime, and Anderson just looked the exact opposite. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, any middleweight who's worth anything is going to go in there and beat Anderson Silva at this point. It's just unfortunate, but that's the reality. I mean, Silva's best chance of having success in this sport is in another promotion where the talent level's worse. And, you know, it would be absolutely shocking, though, because if you're the UFC, they've shown that they don't want their superstars to go to another promotion. So they'll let him hang on and get fight after fight after fight. We've seen that with BJ Penn, and I think we'll probably see that with Anderson if he can even recover and fight again. Because at some point, the body's going to take him out if he isn't.
My other big takeaway from the UFC card, it definitely has to do with Alexander Volkanovski. And first off, kudos to the Brazilian fans for screaming when he grabbed the cage at one point. And, you know, Jose Aldo, you know, after it, what I would take basically saying is I had an off night. Volkanovski definitely on Saturday night showed he is the rightful number one contender. However, he's not getting title fight. It will be Frankie Edgar, which I understand why that matchup is happening, because look, Max Holloway wants to get back in there. He wants to get back on the winning stride, and you know, Volkanovski's not going to be ready, you know, to fight in 2 months. But I understand that. But I was looking at Frankie Edgar's resume at 145 pounds, and I was kind of amazed to see that when you look at Frankie's wins at 145 pounds, the only fighters that are in the top 15 right now are Jeremy Stephens, Yair Rodriguez.
Wow. And, I mean, the thing is, if you add Cub Swanson to the mix, those are the only three fighters that Frankie Edgar has wins over that is going to have a fight. Oh, I missed Charles Oliveira. And Charles Oliveira, those four fighters are the only fighters Edgar has a win over that's going to get a UFC fight in the next year.
Think about this with Cub Swanson, though. So he's lost four in a row, all against elite competition. Mm-hmm. So when he had that four-fight winning streak, the wins were against Hakran Diaz, Tatsuo Kaojiri, Duho Choi, and Artem Lobov. Would Duho Choi be the only one still left in the UFC?
I think, yeah, I'm pretty sure.
It's kind of, you know, to me, it's kind of this longevity of Frankie Edgar, but Frankie is starting to kind of get in that Uriah Faber category of title shots and not being able to cash in on them. You know, he's lost his last four title fights. You know, I think that even if Frankie was being honest, he has to admit that Alexander Volkanovski is the number one contender. But the reason to me he's getting this is more about timing than anything else.
And timing in that this is probably going to be the one opportunity we have to see a championship fight between Max Holloway and Frankie Edgar. And that's pretty exciting in and of itself. It's kind of a passing of the guard, even though I guess Frankie has literally never been a featherweight champion. He sure has felt like it, mm-hmm. given the fact he held that 155-pound strap. So I'm excited for that fight. But it to me, man, Alexander Volkanovski was just unreal. This run he is on, the win over Chad Mendes, and he goes out there, Jason, against a guy in Jose Aldo, who we've seen be one of the best strikers in this sport, completely outstrikes him in three rounds, and gets that decision win over a legend, a guy who we've seen still has it. I mean, whoever wins Edgar versus Holloway, and I didn't think I was going to say this about Max Holloway, because I just thought he was phenomenal after that Ortega win, but this fight, I think they're keeping that title belt warm for Alexander Volkanovski. I mean, this guy looks like a freaking robot.
He's passed every test. I mean, every time, you know, it was, you know, Chad Mendes in the last one, now this one. I mean, you know, it's crazy about Frankie Edgar. Just have his Wikipedia up, you know, so I mentioned about, he's 0-4 in his last four title fights. And, of course, those were losses against Jose Aldo and Benson Henderson. You have to go back to 2011. The last time he won a title fight, that of course was against Gray Maynard in Houston.
Yeah, that's the last time. That's a very long time from now when Gray Maynard and Frankie Edgar were on top of the lightweight world. It's been a while. I mean, Edgar, when he's not in a title fight, he looks damn good and he has a high degree of talent. But yeah, he's not the fight. That's just not the fight I want to see, even though I understand why it's happening, because you want to get a fight in there for Holloway.
I'll give you a takeaway from the PFL card, and that's Kayla Harrison. The fact of, first time we've seen Kayla Harrison have to deal with some adversity in a fight where, I mean, you know, she gives up her back and you know, submission's trying to get locked in. But I think the thing that you enjoy about Kayla Harrison is, you know, this is an athlete that it is about perfection. You know, going out there and it was a clear win for her, no question. But, you know, she was visibly upset the fact that this was not the type of performance she wanted. And I think that's kind of why, you know, you love Kayla Harrison, is because the fact that this is a girl who wants to go out there and she wants to be the best ever. And if she doesn't have an A-plus performance, she's very disappointed in herself.
Yeah, dude, like, if you're disappointed in a fight where one of the judges scored it 30-25,
yeah,
you're on a hell of a trajectory. And she showed some moments of weakness there, but she defended well. And for the most part, this was a fight in which it's just her judo was unbelievable. Her ability to get on top of her opponents, maintain positional control, a little more active in that third round. I mean, it was a well-rounded performance for Kayla Harrison against a veteran. And it's just like the only fighter that I think is going to contend with her has to be Sarah Kaufman, who, I mean, obviously she's such a small fighter for women's lightweight, but in her first fighting against Morgan Fryer, goes out there, gets that first round victory, feels good about doing a natural weight cut, which I think the natural weight cut is cutting no weight at all. So, I mean, Kaufman Harrison, that's what they're building to, and I'm looking forward to seeing it. Harrison looked great. This PFL 12 card, Jason, was a really fun watch. I mean, it started off with Sada Busai coming out there throwing like one kick to the body of David Todd and knocking him out. Or not knocking him out, but he crumbles down like a pancake. Ray Cooper and Zane Kamaka, the battle of the cousins. And Cooper, man, it's going to be a rough Easter as he taps out Kamaka. And then the defending welterweight champ, the guy who beat Cooper, Magomed Kerimov, just completely picked apart John Howard. I mean, this looked like a mismatch on paper, and it played out like it.
Dude, he's talented, man. That you know, I don't know if there's anybody in the welterweight field that will contend with him. But yeah, I mean, it's one of these things about this season of the PFL. It's more of this. It's just this anticipation that we all have that the final is going to be Kayla versus Kaufman, you know, and after seeing, you know, I think the thing that you see with Kayla, I mean, look, the judo is unbelievable, very good on the ground. But look, you do see there's striking issues there. And I mean, and it's not like I'm saying anything that no one else is going to say, you know, but I don't. You mentioned about the size difference. I don't know if I would pick Kaufman over Harrison at this point. I don't know if I would.
Yeah, I mean, look, Kaufman was able to defend the wrestling and keep it a standard fight. She's going to go out there and she's going to be the winner of this tournament. Just doubt that's going to happen. And I wouldn't pick Kaufman because I think the size and the wrestling or the takedown ability of Kayla Harrison is just going to be too great against a fighter in Kaufman. Even there's plenty of fighters that have better striking than Harrison, but just – none of them, in my opinion, have the ability to defend the takedown.
Now, the two other things that I want to mention about the Bellator card. First off, AJ McKee. What impressed me the most about him was when he got taken down and just the offense that he was landing off his back. Very clear win for him. You know, obviously the fans didn't really like the action there in the third round. And then, of course, Jake Hager. I mean, look, we all know what that fight was. Let's not kid ourselves. And I know there are some people will say, well, how did TJ Jones get in this opportunity? And this is just how it works is Bellator's talent relations, they work with local matchmakers to try to find, you know, talent for cards. And that's how TJ Jones got in this spot. When I was sitting in my office on, I think it was Thursday of last week when they did the press conference, and TJ Jones is sitting there and he sits down and I go, oh my God. Like, I'm just like, oh, he's going to get asked a question and something amazing is going to happen here. And then, of course, you know, we hear about, you know, working in a meat packing plant and how he has a father, six kids. And of course, all the memes come out there. And I just like, he looked like a guy who showed up at that press conference and just like was just like out chilling at the park with his kids.
Okay, so without a doubt. And by the way, just a great win for AJ McKee. He beats Pat Curran, and he looks good doing so. A step up. But moving on. Without a doubt, the best moment of the weekend. My number one moment was TJ Jones. God, just beautiful poetry. I mean, from the press conference, Jason, just a meme in and of itself. I mean, it feels good to talk about mixed martial arts with your friends. And when you have Jack Swagger and Jake Hager, whatever the hell you want to call him. You want to call him Mr. I Hold On Chokes for Too Long. You call him whatever. You have him, tall, muscular, etc. And Greg from your friend group, TJ Jones, on the other side. You have those two at a press conference. The jokes are endless. You can share your love of the sport with your friends. You can just send them that screenshot and they'll laugh. This thing was perfect. I mean, TJ Jones, man. This guy should be signing some autographs. I mean, he's just unbelievable. You know, it just – I mean, he fought like how he looked. I'll tell you that much. But it was so much fun to be a part of the Twitter world, reading everyone's jokes because, yeah, this looked like – I mean, this looked like the quarterback of the football team going up against I don't know who, the band director, and the quarterback got the victory.
Like I saw this picture. It was of TJ smiling at the press conference, and the tweet was, "People be like, why is he smiling? He's about to get smashed. He's a 29-year-old father of six. He just pumped you out of the house." I mean, just like, and then of course I saw Sam Kaplan go, "Nice to see TJ Jones went to the barber to go get the Kevin Owens look." I mean, it's just like, But you know what? I'll say this, man. TJ Jones has run with it. Here's the other thing I'll say. If that was Greg Hardy who held on to the choke as long as Jake did, how different's the narrative?
I think it's totally, like, that was, I think that's the narrative is get him out of the sport. Like that is absolutely, that he held it on for too long. As simple as that.
No doubt.
And if somebody else did it with the worst track record, we would be, that would be one of the biggest talking points. And it's just like, come on, this can't be a part of your gimmick here, is to hold on submission too long.
Yeah, and then you do the whole heel turn.
Yeah, it's like, I love pro wrestling, Jason, but this is real life. And in a shoot fight, when you're holding on a submission for too long, it's not funny and cute about marketing. It's, you're endangering someone's life.
Yeah, it's just that whole situation. I mean, look, and TJ Jones is the type of guy that Jake Hager should be fighting. I mean, when I see people complain, and I understand the complaints of the matchmaking, but when I look at that and I just sit there and say, well, who do you want Jake Hager to fight? They're not going to put him up there against some guy who's like 6-7-8-0 type guy, because, you know, hey, they're trying to develop Jake Hager as an opponent. I mean, hell, probably the right matchup to make would actually probably be Jake Hager versus Greg Hardy. But I don't blame the way Bellator is trying to develop Jake Hager. The only thing that to me was odd was that Jake said he wants to be 4-0 by the time Donald Trump gets reelected in 2020, which, not, and by no stretch of the imagination we try and talk politics, but I'm sitting there going, okay, if he gets reelected in 2020, that's November 2020. So we're in May of 2019. You get what I'm saying here, Daniel?
I think it doesn't sound like
he wants to be a very active fighter.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, he's fighting on borrowed time. He is not a young spring chicken. If he has aspiration in the sport to be a top heavyweight and you're fighting on that type of trajectory, you're not going to get there before you're age 52. So,
It was just an odd statement to say, I want to have four fights under my belt in, what, 18 months from now?
Yeah, that's just, and it's never going to be easier than it is now. It never is in terms of the competition, getting in there, getting those victories. You're going to fight the TJ Joneses of the world. When you start becoming a top flight fighter, that's when you can take some time between your fights.
Yeah, but But overall, like you said, it was a good weekend of fights. Watched the PFL on Thursday night, and then, of course, the UFC and Bellator. I did find it wasn't until actually I looked at the Bellator website. You realize the next Bellator event's not till June the 14th?
I saw that yesterday, and damn, that's a long time.
Because, I mean, you look at this calendar the UFC has in 2019. They're going to do 42 events. I mean, it's just, you know, it's like it's one realm versus the other, where it's like UFC, hey, we're going to do a fight every weekend, where Bellator's like, you know what? We're going to spread ourselves out a little bit.
That's not the worst strategy, because you look at the UFC event, Jason, that's this weekend, and you ready for the amount of fights I'm excited for? One.
Yeah.
I'm excited for one fight on that whole card.
So, yeah.
Yeah, Jesus.
I mean, yeah, you look at and obviously, that one fight is RDA and Kevin Lee. Of course, we were supposed to have Vicente Luque versus Neil Magny. However, Neil Magny is out of the fight, and you got to love the transparency of Neil Magny, noting that USADA had sent him an email saying, hey, you know, something's come up in your drug test. And Neil's always been a guy that, you know, has been very, you know, hey, clean fighter, so we'll see what happens there. Derek Krantz is going to now step in to take on Vicente Luque. Of course, he was actually supposed to be on the Contender Series. And I know that, you know, a lot of these short notice opportunities right now in the UFC is the Contender Series guys are the ones, and ladies are the ones that are in these opportunities. But yeah, I mean, you look at this fight card, which, by the way, the main card will air on ESPN Plus at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Saturday. Your prelims will start at 5 p.m. Eastern time. But yeah, you look up and down this lineup, it's kind of hard to sit there and say, what is that number two fight that really has you jacked, really is ultimately that fight that is bringing you to the table, you know? And maybe it's just a fighter is bringing you to that table. I mean, maybe on the prelims, maybe it's a fighter like Dez Green, you know, fighting in his hometown. Maybe it's a fighter, you know, like Megan Anderson, because of, you know, just how thin it is at women's 145 pounds. Maybe it's someone like a Grant Dawson, but, you know, outside of that, there's, or maybe it's a Shiara Eubanks on the main card. Maybe you're interested to kind of see her, but, you know, in terms of the fight, man, it's really tough to look at this card and say, what is the number two fight of the night?
Yeah, I don't know what it is, Jason. It unfortunately, all the power to Derek Krantz, but it's not Derek Krantz versus Cynthia Luque. I mean, that's a fight that I'm not looking forward to. God, I look at this card, Jason, and to me, the fight I'm looking forward to here is number two. It's not the trilogy between Nick Lentz and Charles Oliveira. I think it is Megan Anderson versus Felicia Spencer, the Invicta FC featherweight champion. I think that would be the fight I would point to as the one I'm looking forward to the second most.
In terms of that main event, you know, and I mentioned about this question that JG asked a little earlier. He said, what's Kevin Lee's future in limbo between 155 and 170? And, you know, Kevin Lee is just he's a prime example of a fighter that, man, if there was a 165-pound weight class, this would be ideal for him, because obviously getting the 155 is not an easy taking for him. And, you know, in terms of, I just don't think he's going to have the size, especially when you talk about some of those upper echelon 170-pound fighters. And, I mean, pretty much when you look at the betting odds, this is a pick'em type fight. You know, you look at Rafael Dos Anjos, to me, he is the guy that I would pick in this fight, just because I just think that he will, you know, have a size advantage in this one. You know, and you look at Hardier's losses in the UFC. I'm going to give you his past five losses in the UFC. Kamaru Usman, Colby Covington, Tony Ferguson, Eddie Alvarez, Khabib Nurmagomedov.
Jason, that is, what's the word? Pretty impressive.
Think about that run RDA went on after that Khabib loss in 2014, you know, up to, you know, defending the lightweight title against Donald Cerrone in 2015. Wins against Jason High, Benson Henderson, Nate Diaz, Anthony Pettis, Donald Cerrone.
Yeah. I mean, even wins over Robbie Lawler, Neil Magny, Tarek Saffiedine, like, those hold up. And that's the general thought here, is RDA has had success against better competition than Kevin Lee has had. Kevin Lee's well-rounded, you know, and that's a big factor here, is that Kevin Lee can adjust himself to whatever RDA does. I think more so than RDA can to Kevin Lee, but I still think Rafael Dos Anjos is fighting on home court here at the welterweight division. He showcases superior skill set more often. And I do think he's going to get the victory here. So it's a great fight. It's a pick-em fight. You can go either way, but I'm picking Dos Anjos.
I just wonder, will this be the fight where Kevin Lee really sticks to his wrestling? Because I look at this and I say, okay, if this fight stays on the feet, you know, I think Kevin Lee could give RDA some battles. But I just think that the power advantage is going to lie in RDA's aspect in here. But, you know, to me, I think that equalizer for Kevin Lee is what, you know, maybe he can get the fight to the ground and maybe he can use his wrestling. I think that the likelihood this thing goes all five rounds between these two guys. But to me, you know, Kevin Lee, Rafael Dos Anjos is my pick. I was interested in that Vicente Luque, Neil Magny fight, but obviously we know that's not going to happen anymore. And, you know, look, kudos to Derek Krantz for stepping up and taking on a guy like Vicente here on, you know, less than a week's notice. So Jara Eubanks and Aspen Ladd, you know, that's a fight that definitely kind of intrigues me. We've got Antonio Carlos Jr. versus Ian Heinisch. Charles, you mentioned about Charles Oliveira and Nick Lentz. You know, Davi Ramos taking on Austin Hubbard. You know, kind of how does Davi Ramos continue to develop? I would say Grant Dawson, definitely a guy to pay attention to on the preliminary card. But You know, there's just not a, you know, there's not a ton that I think it's appointment watching television when it comes to this card.
Dude, there is nothing here that I'm looking forward to other than the main event. I mean, it's as simple as that. Like, I'm going to watch everything, yeah, and we'll talk about what the impressive performances are. But heading into this fight card, this is a major downer. And this is going to have so little traction on online on Saturday. It's a shame.
Oh, totally, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we had a great weekend this past weekend, but this upcoming week is a symptom of the problem of having too many events.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be I'm actually going to be at a retirement party on Saturday. My barber is finally decided to call it a career, and so Daniel, I've got this little bit of problem. So literally, the same guy has cut my hair since I was probably like 6 or 7 years old.
Yeah.
Now I got to try to find somebody.
I think you got to just.
I remember I was probably, I don't know, middle school. And then he had someone who was working in a shop, and the line to see him was so long. And I was like, oh, I'll give the other guy a chance. And then, yep, nope. Nope. Only trust one guy with my hair.
Have you ever heard of Just a Cut?
No.
Hey, dude, you go to Just a Cut, man. They go there and just for a haircut.
Yeah, you know? Man. It's one of those things, like, I was like, I'm sitting there going, because it was funny, I called him last week, because today's actually his physical last day of working. And I said, hey, man, you got any appointments open up before you call it a career? And he goes, not right now, man. I'll put you on the waiting list. I was like, okay. I'm like, because like, I'm at that point, like, I really need a haircut. I'm getting a little shaggy up top there. But yeah, I guess I got to do that whole Facebook recommendation thing.
No, you got to get a mullet. You got to just let it grow out.
No, no. And, God, no.
Come on, man.
Look. I'll leave that to Ricky Simon. He can have the MMA mullet because I mean, that thing is glorious. But yeah, no, me and mullet, new. Not happening.
Look, man, I'm just telling you what's best for you. You know, you want to be cool like the kids. That's one way to do it.
Okay, so you're going to grow out a mullet?
No.
Oh, cool. I see how it is.
Come on, man. I got other body parts that, you know, are impressive.
Yeah. That's a weird thing, man. It's one of those things of you just can't let anyone just cut your hair.
You see, I need to learn that lesson because I do, and my hair sometimes looks like crap. So I mean, you always see pictures of me with long hair because whenever I do get haircuts, I look awful. So I always go to Just a Cut. I always go to Supercuts. I only go when I have time, and my haircuts always are pretty bad. So
literally, I was driving to the studio, and one of the places I drove by was Sports Clips, and I was like, man, do I want to go to a chain place?
I mean,
I'm sure there's good barbers in those places. I'm sure.
Yeah, but you really want to go out and find one by going through plenty of bad experiences? Like no.
That's not, like, look, if you listen to this podcast, you live in the Tampa, in the South Tampa area, let me know who's a good barber. I need to know.
Yeah. I think you got to go with those online.
It's one of those things, like, my wife, she's always joking me. She's like, this is the day you've been regretting. I go, oh, yeah, I knew it was coming. I mean, you know, Steve's in his early 60s, so you knew it was coming. You knew it was coming.
Steve's been losing his eyesight. He's been cutting my ear. Set of my hair.
No. It's none of that. I think we all kind of get that point. We want to get to a point where, you know, you work all these years, you build this, you know, nice bank account. You're like, man, I want to enjoy life. You know, we all don't want to be working until we're 75 years old, you know. I mean, look, if I could retire at 50 years old, I'd be really happy.
Yeah, if I could retire at 70 years old, I think I'd be really happy at the way my life's going, you know. So yeah, we'll see what happens, Jason. But you know, you were a good barber if people were throwing you a going away party.
Yeah. So yeah, that's what I'll be doing on Saturday night. But yeah, it's one of those things. I'll send that tweet out after, like, on Sunday morning. Hey, how were the fights last night? Anything of note I should go back and watch? That's how you know. Yeah. Like, and it's more about, hey, what prelim fights do I really need to go watch?
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the game plan, I think. If you want to survive as an MMA fan, you got to do the a la carte on some of these fight cards where you read about what happened and you pick which ones to watch, because if you find yourself watching a snoozer, you're going to regret how you spent your time.
Exactly. But yeah, so we got UFC Rochester coming up on Saturday. No UFC the following week on Memorial Day weekend. So then, of course, mention. But next Thursday, we do have the second PFL event. So we will talk about the PFL 2 coming up on next week's edition of the podcast. And, of course, what else is going on in the world of MMA. Be sure to hit up themmareport.com for various interviews. Going to have an interview up with Vince Morales. Look for that here this week. Also, going to be chatting with Walt Harris later on today. So look forward to that conversation. Plus, got a couple other interviews as well. Of course, later on this week, myself and Bellator vet Pete Rogers Jr. will have a DFS show to talk about UFC Rochester, try to help you make a little money on DraftKings coming up this weekend. So be on the lookout for that on themmareport.com. Also on the MMA Report YouTube channel. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Crush Performance with Jeff Crichel Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
We are going to have a very, very serious conversation, and I don't want to pigeonhole this just as a baseball conversation, though that will be the theme. There is meaning and information inside of today's conversation that go well beyond the sport of baseball. We're talking about youth sport and athlete development, athlete health, and injury prevention. It just so happens that we're looking at the first month of baseball, but we're also tracking back and looking at the trends of what's happening in baseball. Much like we follow the NFL and hockey for concussion information and concussion trends, we see it spinning off into games like rugby and soccer and the combative sports. The information we get from every sport has meaning in the sporting community. Today, however, we're going to have a serious conversation about a major problem in baseball, and that's injuries. We are at a tipping point, in my humble opinion. The number of injuries that we're seeing, not just at the professional level, but at the developmental levels, and probably most concerning, what we're seeing down in the grassroots level, is very concerning. Sport should be fun. Kids should be enjoying it, not getting hurt. Again, it goes back to my question. If I were to say we're destroying more talent than we're creating, how would you react to that?
Crush Performance with Jeff Crichel can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.